everybody, and welcome to another True Stories of Tinseltown. And yes, I'm going to say it. This is my second annual spooktacular. I know it's corny, but I can't help it, and I only get to say it once a year. So I do have a spooktacular for you. I have a wonderful guest today, and his name is Tom Ogden, and he is also known as the Ghost Guy. And I want to welcome you, Tom, and thank you for being on my second annual Spooktacular.
I'm very flattered. Thanks for asking me, Grace.
Well, my pleasure. He also wrote a book. This is what made me have him come on. He wrote this wonderful book about the hauntings in classic Hollywood. And the book, I love the name, Haunted Hollywood, Tinseltown Terror, Filmdom Phantoms, and Movieland Mayhem. Ooh, love it. That's so great, Tom.
Sorry, but I'm a big fan of alliteration.
Oh, that's fabulous. I just love the whole thing. It's just perfection. Anyway, like I said, thanks for being here. And this is something I didn't know because I checked your bio and all that stuff today. You have been a professional magician for 40 years, correct?
Yes. Thank God I've never had another job. Straight out of college, I ran away and joined a circus for a couple of years.
Were then you a I went clown? Into...
No, I was the magician.
Oh.
In the sideshow, and then I had a center ring illusion act, and even did a Houdini-style upside-down straitjacket escape over the center ring. Yeah, but then, of course, I got tired of performing outdoors for 9 months a year, so I started doing corporate work and private parties and, you know, that sort of thing. Theaters, the usual resume of a professional magician, Atlantic City, Tahoe, you know, Vegas, that sort of stuff. But the bulk of that 40 years, I would say for 30 of them, I spent about a third of the year out on ships, so I've been very lucky. A deck of cards has gotten me to more than 100 countries across
the planet.
That's
so wonderful. Good for you, yes. Tom. That's amazing. That's why you know.
And by the way, that's how the Haunted Hollywood book came about, sort of sideways. I was asked to write the Complete Idiot's Guide for Magic Tricks, part of that orange-colored cover.
Yes, of course. I've bought a few of those.
Oh, okay. Well, I did the one on magic tricks and then the follow-up on street magic. And they said to me, we want to do a non-instructional book, just a general reader interest book about ghosts and hauntings. You're a magician. You must know all about ghosts. And I said to them, does it pay in advance against royalties? They said, yes. I said, I know everything there is to know.
But I guess you didn't.
And I knew nothing at that point. I knew the methods that magicians produce the illusion of ghosts on stage.
Yes, that's what I wanted to
And how...
You knew all the tricks.
Yes. And also knew how magicians like Harry Houdini would debunk, spiritualists, fake mediums, because they were using magical methods, many of them. And so I started doing the research, and I got so fascinated by not just the ghost stories. I mean, they're wonderful to listen to and tell and share, but about the actual investigation process of how people decided in the late 1800s with the first psychical society in London to investigate the claims and to go. They didn't do ghost hunting yet per se. They didn't stake out cemeteries at first.
Or like abandoned mental institutions and things like that.
Right.
Yeah.
But they would instead collect stories and evidence and weigh them against what was possible and what wasn't possible by other means. They tried to answer the universal question a universal definition for a ghost, for instance. Why do some people see a spirit? Why do others only sense an apparition? Why do some people only feel the hairs in the back of their neck go up?
What about smelling a ghost?
Or smelling the ghost, yes, or feeling touched, but no one's there. And why doesn't everyone feel it? So these are the questions they've been trying to sort out now for more than a century.
And that got
me fascinated.
I got to ask you this. In the beginning, when you took the project, did you believe in ghosts? Or did you think you were going to find a lot of baloney?
I believed in the possibility of ghosts. Because I have seen people's reaction to my magic, where they would say, "No way," and I knew it was just a simple, optical illusion. I knew how easily the human eyes and especially the ears, hearing, can be duped. So I came in as a skeptical, not a skeptical believer, but a skeptical want to believe. Does that make more sense?
Yes. A skeptical, how do I know? Let's check it out, right? Sort of like
And that has always been my approach in the books. I don't consider myself a ghost hunter. I consider myself a ghost journalist. In other words, I will go out and collect other people's stories that were first-person stories on their parts, and compare them to others and then to historical records to find out how much of this stuff could have happened at the time they claimed it did, how much has become whispered down the alley, changes in rumors over the years.
Yeah.
And that's what appealed to me, that type of investigative process. And it's there's an old principle that says a magic principle that if everything else possible can be exhausted, any other explanation can be exhausted, then what's left is what it has to be. So if you've gotten rid of virtually any possible explanation for what a haunting could be, and there's still some evidence there, then it has to be given real credibility or consideration.
So now, do you believe in ghosts?
I don't like to say that, but yes, I do.
You do. Why don't you like to say that?
Because I prefer in my lectures and books to put the evidence out there and let people decide for themselves.
Which they will, but, you know.
Which they will, regardless of whether I say I believe or not.
Right. Can you tell me?
And I've also, although I've never seen a ghost.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask you.
Pardon?
I was going to ask you, had you ever seen a ghost?
Oh, yes. No, I have never seen a ghost, or I would probably be an absolute believer. But there are members in my immediate family who have.
And you believe them 100%.
And I believe them 100%. And the people that I most believe are the people that have nothing to gain and everything to lose by telling the stories, such as a judge or a lawyer. Nobody wants to be known as the crazy lawyer or the spooky judge. He believes a ghost exists. How can we believe a sentence? And now the Air Force pilots that are coming out.
Oh, for the UFO stuff. Yeah.
Right. They're completely separate fields, but they do have that in common. That the airplane pilots didn't mind saying it, but the military would not discuss it because it could hurt their records and their rank.
And it could also cause mass panic.
Yeah, well, that too.
But, I always believed that I've never seen a UFO or anything like that, but I've always believed that there's got to be something more than this world.
The galaxy is huge.
We couldn't even imagine how vast it is.
And that is what I agree with 100%. We already know our five senses are so limited.
Right.
I mean, even when we look at what other species can sense that we can't. A dog can hear better than we can. I mean, we know how limited our senses are, that there has to be something else out there. And I want to be careful that I do not believe necessarily that a spirit, a ghost, and the soul are the same things. I think the soul is a religious term that has been given to what might be something else entirely different. It's the essence of the person.
Right.
All of those is the essence of the person. The way I suggest that people think about it, if they want a scientific explanation, is I say, usually when a person dies, the matter, we know that matter and energy can't be destroyed or created, it's just transformed
right.
from one to another. Matter, our bodies, we know will disintegrate ashes to ashes. What happens to the electrical energy that keeps us moving and our brain waves and that sort of thing? Well, normally it's dispersed out into the universe. But what if on very, 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 very rare occasions, some part of that essence is able to stay together, that it is recognizable as the form from which it came? And that, I would argue, is what a ghost is.
That sounds good. That sounds what...
Yeah.
It sounds like what
now
people
that
say.
May or may not be the soul. I think there are different ways of looking at the same thing, and the discussion then becomes what happens to it after it leaves the body.
Correct. And we don't know.
Until one comes back to tell us definitively, all agree it's a ghost, we don't know. And that doesn't mean it happens to every ghost.
No.
Because we know they seem to come back for a variety of different reasons.
Right. I have to ask you this. Why you call yourself the ghost guy, and wherever did the origin of boo come from? Why is it boo? When a ghost says something, it's boo.
Oh, you've sent me on a new investigation research. I don't know.
I should have looked that up.
I have looked for the basis for the word abracadabra, but I never thought to look for why they say boo.
Yeah.
Why that's the stereotypical word of a ghost.
Yes.
Yeah.
But we'll check that out. We'll check that out for everybody. So I want to, you know what? I think they did studies. And now, and I believe this is with the prevalence of ghost hunter TV shows and things like that, that more people believe there are ghosts or possibility of ghosts than don't believe.
Yes, and I think it's not just that. I think whenever the world gets in troubled times, either economically or war or unsettled times, people look for something spiritual, something beyond this stuff that we have to put up with every day.
Right.
Whether it's a 7-hour commute to work or whatever.
Right.
You know? And so as people are searching for some meaning in their life besides their cell phone,
God help us with that one.
Yes. I think that, I've had a picture taken of me with a ghost. There's several apps now that will add a choice of spirits standing next to you when a photo is taken of you.
Oh, cool.
With your
so you
cell
can
phone.
Fake
yes.
people out there.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I think because this is a classic Hollywood podcast, I would like us to discuss some classic Hollywood hauntings. And you
great,
as a magician.
Since that's where I live.
And ghost hunter. Hello, Mr. Los Angeles ghost guy. Why don't you tell us about the magician place you hang out? That is allegedly haunted.
Absolutely. There's a club that's been here, I think it's now 57 years, called the Magic Castle. It was originally a home, a private residence for the Roland Lane family. It was built in around 1910.
Mm-hmm.
It's one block, if your listeners know where the have been here and know where the Chinese theater is, Grauman's Chinese, uh-huh. the handprints and all that.
Uh-huh.
One block behind it is this mansion going halfway up the Hollywood Hills and very visible in town. And in the 1960s, two brothers whose father was a magician decided to fulfill their late father's dream and build a clubhouse where magicians could get drunk to hang out and do tricks for each other, basically.
Sort of like the Friars Club for comics.
Sort of like, yeah. Yes, it's, exactly. But they put also a veneer is not the right word, a respectability to it, because it also became, just like the Academy of Television or the Movie Academy, it became the Academy of Magical Arts. So it has a huge research library and video and of course, experts in the field living and working there as well. And it has a training program for young magicians.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, and of course, for the magicians who live here, they have a dozen different magicians every week from all over the world come to perform at this club. But of course, it's a very old building. And some of the spirits were already there when we moved in, and others have come since. And I have heard many, many first-person stories from performers and staff who have seen or experienced weird things at the castle. I'll share one with you, one of my favorites. One of the hosts, a guy named Marty, was in charge. He was the late manager, and he was in charge of closing down the club at 2 a.m. after everybody leaves. And like any business, you start at the back and work toward the front door to make sure everyone's out of the premises.
Right.
And as you go along, you lock the doors to the different rooms, turn on the emergency switches, the lights, and darken the place and all that. So there was one particular room, which is called the parlor, because it's supposed to look like an old Victorian parlor, where he turned off the lights, closed it, locked the door, and halfway down the hallway, he noticed light behind him. He turned back, and the lights was beaming out under the door that the lights had gone back on. Well, it was an old building. He thought maybe because these used to be not on-off switches, but they were dimmers, used to be. And he went back, and sure enough, they were all on. He turned it back off, looked around, make sure no one was there, closed the door, and this time no sooner had the door shut behind him than the lights came back on. And he walked back in. They're talking 2 in the morning. He's the only guy in the building. And he said facetiously out loud, "I don't know who's doing it, but I'm tired and want to go home. Stop it." And at that point, all of the lights went out.
Huh.
Now, two different spirits have been seen in that room. But the one that's been seen most frequently is an elderly man who's and this is all most often seen by the cleaning staff that come in around 6 a.m. in the morning or 4 in the morning. And it's an elderly man, around 70s, 80s, white hair. He's sitting in the middle of the front row of the theater. He gets up the side aisle, turns to a wall, and walks through it. Now, we've had suspicions of who it might be, of a, and one of the maids identified it as a former magician, a late magician named Di Vernon. But I could never figure out why he or any ghost would be walking into the wall. There was nothing on the other side. And it was only about 3 years ago that someone said, let's walk outside and check that out. And we realized that originally that mansion had a parking lot on what is now our roof. Not of the old mansion, but an annex that's been built behind it. And where that room is, there used to, when it used to be a parking garage, that was the way you would leave the parking garage. So there used to be a set of concrete steps right on the other side of where that wall is today.
So he was looking for his ghost car.
Maybe. This, the same way in the bottom section of that part of the building and the lower section of that part of the building, a friend of mine, Alma, who was working she is a medium and a sensitive, but she was working the gig reading, doing card readings as dressed as a gypsy for a private party.
Like tarot cards?
Yes, yes. And she sees a man in a brown suit and a brown hat looking very 1940s, 1950s.
Oh.
Come
dapper.
Toward her. Mm-hmm. Yes. Didn't acknowledge her at all. Walked by her table and up the staircase behind her to the upper level. And she followed him, went upstairs. The guy wasn't around, but one of the staff was by the upstairs bar screwing in a light bulb. He was on a ladder screwing in a light bulb. And she said to him, have you seen a man walk by here with a brown suit and a hat on? And he said, not today, but that's the ghost. That this staff person had seen him previously walking through that part of the building, which used to be in a ground-level parking area.
Gee,
in what the annex is.
Popular haunting sites, parking lots, that, who knew?
And, and here's what's weird about it.
Yeah.
It wasn't added until the 1940s or 1950s and didn't sit there for, well, maybe 30 years as a parking structure. In the house itself, there's been a little girl that no one knows who she is. Sometimes, usually in a yellow dress, sometimes a white dress. She has been seen in the basement area, skipping along down a long, darkened hallway they have down there. She has also been seen coming out of what used to be the master bedroom and has now been changed into a seance room. And it was the room in which Roland Lane, the original owner, died. And that elderly man that they see, and that they've only seen his back, he and the girl walk through what is now a dining room and then turn the corner and disappear. They think that he may be Roland Lane, but they have no idea who this girl is. But there was a fascinating story about her. I'm rambling on about this one haunting, but it's a fascinating place. Allegedly, during the building of the mansion in 1910, the foreman used to bring his daughter with him to work, and she would sit by a big tree that's still outside the mansion by the driveway and, you know, play jacks or dolls or whatever while her daddy was working. One day he hears a yell to him to come down the driveway to the main road, Franklin Avenue. So he looks over to make sure his daughter's okay. He runs down the hill, and there his daughter has just been struck. And at that era, I don't know whether that would have been a horse or an early car, because we're talking 1910.
Did they have trolley cars as well, or no?
Yes, but they didn't have trolley cars down Franklin. I don't believe, but it could have been. But anyway, the story is that he's found his daughter, yet literally seconds earlier, he had seen her at the top of the hill.
Wow.
Now, is that one of those death at time of death apparitions?
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
And is that the same girl that's seen inside the house? We don't know.
That's quite the mystery, but it's a great story.
But it's a great story. As a matter of fact, we have a séance room, and over the years, different mediums have worked it, and it's really just a show. I mean, they start out with some test things, but then they have a show. They turn on the switch, and it's Disneyland Haunted Mansion. But the original medium, who has since retired, he's now in his late 80s and lives in either North or South Carolina. One night he was doing the seance for the 6 or 8 people or whatever. Back then it was usually 12 people plus the medium. After the lights came back on and the seance was over, a man says, my favorite part of the whole seance was when the ghost of that little girl appeared over your left shoulder and looked at you through the seance and then disappeared. And the medium was freaked out. The guy did not know that just a week earlier, his young preteen daughter, or tween daughter, had been struck by an ice cream truck and killed.
Oh, no.
Not on the castle grounds, but, you know, had just died. And when the guy described what the girl looked like and was wearing, it was a perfect description of his daughter, and it freaked him so much out. It's almost like Whoopi Goldberg in Ghost.
Right.
It freaked him out so much that he quit for a month.
Wow.
And eventually he said, you know, it's like riding a horse. If he doesn't get back up on it, he won't be able to do it anymore. So he did come back, but then retired. He actually retired shortly after I came to Hollywood in the 80s.
Okay. I think it's time we get into some Hollywood hauntings with classic Hollywood ghosties. Tell us about a hotel you like. You've done two, so take your pick.
Well, there are two in the book. I mean, there are
Knickerbocker.
A lot. Actually, there are many more. There are many more in the book. The Oban, the Knickerbocker Hotel. But the one that I still find fascinating, and I'm still being told about, is the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel. It's right on Hollywood Boulevard. As a matter of fact, it's catty-cornered across the street from the Chinese Theater. Both of them, the investors who helped build them were Mary Pickford and Douglas Fairbanks, Sr.
Pickfair,
Yes, which, as your listeners know, also was reputedly haunted. Now we can't check it out because Pia Zordor had it refurbished, which really meant she tore it down and built a new building. I have felt one of the things in the Hollywood Roosevelt that is considered a haunting. Off the main lobby is a room to the side, which is called their big banquet room. It's called the Blossom Room. Mm-hmm. And it's where the first Academy Awards were held back in
29. Yeah.
And it was closed for many years, and it was refurbished right after I moved to Hollywood. It reopened in 1984. And there are two unusual things. Some people will see, no matter which side of the room they're standing in, at the far side of the room, they will see a dark shadow of a of a man.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes on the floor, but sometimes on a small mezzanine that goes around part of the room, which is where the band used to be when it would play for events. He has not been identified because they haven't seen a face.
It's just a shadow on the wall.
Not on the wall, freestanding apparition, but very dark so that they don't see features. They just see an outline that looks more masculine than feminine, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That I haven't seen. But there is a distinct cold spot in the Blossom Room, and it's not always there because I've been in and out several times over the years. And it's about 3 feet in diameter. It's close to the north side of the room. And as your listeners know, there is speculation that these cold spots that appear at the time of hauntings and apparitions may be either a sign that an apparition is present or that it's a portal from the other side to this side. And as you're walking across the room, there is instantly a good 10-degree temperature drop in this little circle. It was not from ventilation. Fans were not on. It was not air conditioning. You walk out of it, and yet it's not always there. I've been in a couple of times, and sometimes it's there and sometimes it's not. The haunting that is most frequently discussed is Marilyn Monroe, who haunts a lot of places in Hollywood.
She gets around, huh?
She gets
as
around.
As a ghost.
Well, even before, apparently. But,
yes.
She used to stay in an upper suite. 1200 was the number when she stayed in it. I don't know what it is today. I'm sure it's been refurbished. She also sometimes haunts a cabana near the poolside where she had one of her famous early photo sessions. But the story from the room is that a maid, now we're going back, well, till shortly, soon after her death, uh-huh. within 10 years after her death. The maid was cleaning up in that particular room, and she looks up at a tall vertical mirror, full-length mirror, that was against one of the walls, and she thought she saw Marilyn standing behind her in the classic makeup look, touching up her makeup. She turns, and no one's there. Now, we've all heard haunted mirror stories. This story, of course, soon got around the staff and then to the manager of the building. And he took the mirror out and put it in his own office for a while. And then either he or a subsequent manager liked the idea of putting it on display, and he moved it down to the lobby. And by now, the ghost community had heard about this mirror. So people would come in and stand in front of it, hoping to catch a glance of Marilyn behind them. I've never talked to anyone who has. But they then moved the mirror down next to the lower elevators down by the valet stand,
uh-huh.
and they positioned it at the end of the room so that if you're standing at the elevators, on your right hand would be this mirror. But behind you, to your left, was a full-length poster of Marilyn Monroe. So that if you positioned yourself just right, just correctly, you could take a picture of yourself or have a friend take a picture of you looking into the mirror with your reflection and, of course, the reflection of the poster behind them.
That's
so it was a really cute tongue-in-cheek thing.
Yeah.
They moved it up to the mezzanine when the gift shop moved up there.
Well, that gets around as much as Marilyn, that mirror.
Yes. And then, unfortunately, when they were redoing the mezzanine, they put it in storage. And the hotel then got new owners that really does not encourage people to come in as sightseers, you know.
Or ghost hunters, Marilyn watchers, yeah.
And just tourists who want to see the inside of the hotel who don't even know about Marilyn. But they certainly didn't want people coming in to look for the ghost. So it has never come out of storage.
Wow.
There is a rumor that it was sold to Lindsay Lohan when she did a magazine shoot. I forget whether it was Elle or Vogue, dressed as Marilyn Monroe. Mm-hmm. That she heard about the mirror during that and bought it, but I haven't been able to confirm that with anybody. Mm-hmm. But regardless, the mirror hasn't been there for about 20 years. But I have pictures of it, you know, from my going to visit it.
And no Marilyn.
Another person. What's that?
And no Marilyn.
And now Marilyn. But no Marilyn for me.
Right.
Yes. And another room that is very haunted, they say, is room 928 on the ninth floor, obviously. And it was where Montgomery Clift stayed while he was shooting the movie From Here to Eternity. And there's a scene in it, in the movie, in which he had to play a trumpet or a bugle, I guess it would have been. Mm-hmm. And he decided he wanted to actually learn to play it so that it didn't have to be dubbed by someone.
I think it's like revelry, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's been years since I've seen the movie. And to this day, apparently people call down to the front desk to try to get that guy who's playing a trumpet in his room across the hall to shut up. It's 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever. And other people have seen a man, but just from his back, walking down the hallway away from them, reading something that could be his script, rehearsing lines.
That's funny, you know. And how many people have seen this and they've actually heard the trumpet?
And that's the thing, the weird one. I could see there's so many actors or actor wannabes in Hollywood that I could believe anyone walking up and down a hallway could be seen reading a script.
Right.
But hearing specifically that instrument. Now, the story's been repeated for years, so mm-hmm. I don't know how recent it is. I have not heard the story again from anyone since the first edition of that Haunted Hollywood came out. There are two editions of it now. The second edition has added about a third more stories. I wanted to tell you, I have a great one first-person story because not from me, but from one of my best friends when I was in college, was out here from the East Coast attending a toy fair because he has a shop back in the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And he was staying at the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel. And the first night I went over, I met him the day after he got in. So he had spent a night in the hotel. This was before I had started writing the ghost books and investigating mm-hmm. ghosts. He asked me, is this hotel supposed to be haunted? And I said, I don't know. Why do you ask, Wayne? And he said, he got up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, and there was a woman sitting at the vanity at the foot of his bed brushing her hair.
Was she hot?
And he didn't say because she was, he didn't say.
Right.
But he said, like he blinked twice and there was no one there anymore. Mm-hmm. And he said, and I didn't have a woman with me that night in the room. So I don't know whether I actually got up or whether I was just dreaming this. And I said, well, it's a great story. So apparently hauntings still do take place there. Now, right across the street, of course, is the Chinese Theater. And it, for years, had the reputation of being haunted by a little girl who would appear in the ladies' restroom, which is downstairs.
Uh-huh.
And back when they used to have a curtain in front of the screen, she would walk between the curtain and the screen. You wouldn't see her, but you'd see someone back there pushing against, banging the curtain. They changed the Chinese about 10 years ago now, to an IMAX theater.
And what a shame. That should never have been changed.
Yes. And although it works very well because it was a huge theater, seat-wise, capacity-wise, so it's it hasn't completely destroyed the interior, but it's changed it a little. And since that change, there have been no reports of the little girl.
And nobody had any idea who the little girl was.
Who she was. No idea who she was.
Maybe, who? Shirley Temple? But was it years and years ago? Who knows?
No, but I think Shirley,
I don't think she haunted.
No, because they were seeing this before she died.
Yeah, I don't think Shirley would haunt. She was a pretty solid citizen. I think she'd want to, get out of Dodge. I think she had enough of Hollywood.
Right. And there is one other ghost at the Chinese Theater that apparently does, it's said he still is around. There was a B-movie actor named Victor Killian, who died in 1979. He lived in an apartment building called the Lido Apartments, which are actually not too far from me, only about 12 blocks from me, on Yucca and Franklin. The building's still there. And he used to frequent the bar in the lobby of the Hollywood Hotel, Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel. So walking back to his apartment building, he would pass through or right in front of the Chinese Theater. Right.
Yeah.
He was murdered in his apartment. He invited the wrong person back to continue their conversation in the in his apartment after the bar closed. And it said that, and they never found the person. And starting around 3 years later, 1982, I'm told, his ghost started appearing in the forecourt where the hands and the footprints are at night. I mean, in the middle of the night, the closing time of the bar, watching people go by as if he's looking to see his killer, because supposedly he either met the guy in the bar or on his walk back to the apartment, and they started chatting.
So this is sort of like a Raymond Navarro
yes.
story?
Yes, but they found his people eventually.
Thank goodness,
yes.
But, why do you trust these people? I guess if you have a few drinks in you, it's like, I trust you.
Yeah, and you've been buddies.
Yeah.
And maybe it wasn't until he got back to the room that he realized that, hey, this was a movie star. He must have some money in here someplace.
Yes, and boom. How about I love this, that somebody, there's hauntings here at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery. Because they take that literally. It's Hollywood Forever, and I'm a ghost, and I ain't going nowhere. So tell us who haunts there, allegedly.
There are three. Probably the most famous is Rudolph Valentino, who was buried not in the ground. He's in the cathedral mausoleum at the far end of there. Now, we all know the story about the woman in black who used to appear on it.
Right.
And people have said that since she's still being seen, it must now be her ghost. More likely it's an impersonator. I mean, we've now discovered that the original Woman in Black was a publicity stunt by Valentina Babe.
Huh.
Yeah.
What about
it's surmised that it was.
What does Rudy do around there?
He just appears near it, or people, you know, they sense his presence, but they don't see him walking around greeting people in his chic costume. But they will feel a change in the atmosphere. Is that what you'd like
atmosphere,
to say?
Yes, that you feel.
When they move to that part of the mausoleum. And otherwise, it's no different than anywhere else in the mausoleum. A ghost, female ghost who does appear is Virginia Rapp. And she was the woman who accused Fatty Arbuckle of rape.
Well, she died. So,
and she died.
First
and she is
died.
Buried in Hollywood Forever Cemetery now.
And he was charged with her murder. And
yes, and
he had three trials.
What, two retrials? It was three trials.
Yeah, two retrials. He was innocent. Ruined his career. But yes, there was a huge party, and there was a rumor, and whatever. He got charged with Virginia Rapp, who was, was she? A wannabe starlet, a party girl, a bit of it all.
Yeah.
So she's hanging around there?
So she's hanging around there.
Was she
buried
there?
Mornings, apparently. Pardon?
She was buried there?
Yes.
Sunday mornings she appears?
I believe it's mornings, yes.
Or just
and
mornings.
It's very wispy because she's by, but if anyone visits, her grave is kind of hard to find because it's only a headstone on the ground. There's not a tombstone.
Right.
An upright stone. And it's by the pool of the lake that's in the pond, rather, not pool.
I have to
pond.
Go there. I have to hit some of these spots.
And the one I'm most affectionate about and want to see is Clifton Webb.
I adore him.
Yes. And he is buried in a different mausoleum called Abbey of the Psalms. He died in 1966 and was quite the mama's boy.
Yes, Maybelle. He could not live with Maybelle.
Yes, and there's a whole story about their house that no longer is standing, unfortunately. Supposedly his apparition actually appears recognizably as Clifton Webb.
Why would he hang out at the cemetery when he can hang out at his house?
It's funny because I addressed that in the introduction to, I've done a book on haunted cemeteries, not at the publisher's request. I didn't want to write it because that was the question I asked my editor. I said, They usually go to places they were loved or felt happy or they have to finish business. Why would they hang out at a cemetery? And she said, I don't know. I just know the title will sell.
At that point,
they wanted 25 stories. I researched, found about 50, picked out my favorite 25 because it could be anywhere in the country. They didn't have to be in Hollywood.
Right.
And indeed, it has been the best-selling title out of that entire series.
You have done so many ghost books. Do you know, how about the...
And I just finished another one. But it won't be out till next summer.
I'm going to link everybody to your books because you wouldn't believe how many ghost books he has. That's why he's a ghost guy. Boo. And how about the Hollywoodland ghost, the sign, Peg Entwistle?
Oh, my goodness. That's the one that got me started.
Yeah. I thought that's so interesting in how she becomes famous. She kills herself and jumps off the sign.
Yes. And there's still her name was Peg Entwistle, who committed suicide in 1932 by climbing – to the top of the H in the Hollywood sign, which at that time still read Hollywood Land, mm-hmm. And jumped off. Her body was found, but separately her purse was found, and she left a suicide note with nothing very specific, just sort of like, I'm sorry to have caused trouble, and only initialed it P.E. So until she was identified, the newspapers, the tabloid-style newspapers, what, they're newspapers that do sensational stories and not
I
just straight news?
I cannot believe it. I
cannot imagine that.
I am shocked.
Dubbed her the Hollywood Sign Girl. And eventually her uncle and aunt, whom she was living with, her niece hadn't come home for a couple of days, but she would often go off with friends, you know. She was a 28 or so-year-old woman, you know.
She was a young woman.
Yeah. So she had friends. They would go out to parties and she'd maybe sleep over there, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Until they suddenly connect, until they published the suicide note. And they realized the PE might be their missing Peg Entwistle. And, you know, they found out indeed she was. Now, she's been buried back east somewhere. Mm-hmm. One of her relatives has written a definitive book on her that they could find out, that readers, listeners could look up for if they really want to know all of her story. The real question is, we still don't know why she killed herself.
Well, there's this, she did one. She was a pretty successful stage actress.
Yes.
She was Brian Keith's stepmother at one point. And she did a movie called 13 Women with Myrna Loy and a bunch of women. And her part got drastically cut. And she was so distraught about that. I don't know if that put her over the edge, but she was really upset at how they butchered her part.
Well, not only that, she was under the Warner contract, I believe it was Warner or RKO, for that one film. And her option wasn't picked up.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Now, and the reason she was cut out is they did the movie with test audiences, and they just felt the movie ran too long. Mm-hmm. And since she was just... one of the ensemble.
Right. She was not Myrna Loy
or the other stars. Yeah. Billy Burke was in it, remember? Wasn't she?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of the reason she was originally brought out here was not to make the movie, but she did a play with Billy Burke. Mm-hmm. And an as yet unknown Humphrey Bogart. And that's where she got the attention of the casting directors to be cast in 13 Women. But maybe if that's all, I find it difficult to believe. I don't find anything difficult to believe these days. But I can understand the disappointment of thinking you lost your shot at movie stardom after one film. But she had done more than a dozen Broadway plays. She could have gone back to New York and been an actress again and come back, because that's what we see today happening when movie stars, TV or film careers start to sag. They go do a Broadway show, get great notices and reviews, and they go back again. Now a star again. So, but you know, when someone decides they're going to commit suicide, it's not a logical act.
No, there can be so many reasons behind it. That probably was one of the reasons, but...
And we also don't know a lot about her personal life at that time.
No. I know she got divorced from Ian Keith, who was Brian Keith's dad, and he was an actor. But other than that, no, I really don't know. But she is said to be haunting the Hollywood sign, correct?
Yes. Yes, the people will see her on top of the Hollywood sign, and by the time they try to get a closer look or put up binoculars or something like that, she's not gone. People have called the police.
Wow.
People who stand in on an overlook, a popular overlook of the Hollywood, not an overlook, but a side view of mm-hmm. the Hollywood sign, on a path that she would have walked up to the top of the sign, smell gardenias, which was her favorite perfume and flowers, even when it's not, they're not in season. But the weird thing is that they will see her apparition. Now, you can't go up to the Hollywood sign anymore.
Oh, really? It used to be a great hiker spot, right?
I know. I was stupid when I moved here and young and able and physically able to do it. That I never walked up, but it really was through brush and bramble. And the Hollywood sign was falling down, basically. Remember, it was restored when a lot of stars, including stars and industry people like Hugh Hefner, bought for the rebuilding of one of the O's.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point, you could walk up through this underbrush and you could pick off the flooring off the ground and keep pieces of the old Hollywood sign that had fallen off. And I just never made the climb because you live here, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I don't
it's like
frequent
you're in Manhattan.
The Statue
no,
of Liberty, get, yeah. That's
I'll go out to the Statue of Liberty one day, but it's always there. But there is a way around still to the back of it. On what is the fire trail behind, I'm blocking the name of the specific hill that the Hollywood sign is on. Is it Mount Hollywood? I think it may be. All of it's part of Griffith Park, which we're going to have to leave if you invite me back sometime because of the many, many hauntings Griffith Park.
I definitely want you to come back on, Tom. Definitely.
I've never seen her, but that was the first. As a matter of fact, I have. If you go on YouTube, I have made two, like 5 minute, 6 minute mini documentaries that I posted. Just type into the search Tom Ogden Hollywood Sign Girl, and it'll come up. I mean, that's the easiest way to search for it.
Yes.
Because there have been several of those little stories done, but I did one of those, and I did another one on the Magic Castle. So if on YouTube...
You can give me the links probably, to those, Tom. You know,
I'll send you those. Actually, yeah. I think I did send you those, and you could post them on your website.
I will post them on my website
them.
And have people come in and check them out.
Yes.
Anyway,
they were a lot of fun to do.
I'm sure. I smelled a ghost once, and it was like not a pleasant odor, and it wasn't me. I found out the guy that lived in my house, my ex-husband and I lived in a studio, and first I smelled it. I'm sitting on the couch, and it just comes out of nowhere. It just wafts, and then it dissipates, and it was like, I'm here alone. Where's this? I don't know. And I just brushed it off. I mean, I was nowhere where anything would stink. And so my ex-husband and I are sitting down watching a movie. And then all of a sudden, at the same time, we look and say, it wasn't me. So he smelled it too. And it wafted away. And we found out because a friend of ours had lived there years before we moved in, and her friend lived in that apartment, and he had many, many problems with his gastrointestinal system. Mm. And so he was a nice ghost, but we did move. And
a stinky ghost.
Yes, a gaseous ghost, and he was never to be smelled again. So he was a ghost nonetheless, and I do believe in him, and I feel things and stuff like that. So anyway, this is a lovely spooktacular, and I want to thank you so much, Tom Ogden, magician and the ghost guy. And next time we talk, we're going to know where the heck Boo came from. And
yes.
Tom has a myriad.
Note to self.
Yes. Tom has a myriad of haunted books, ghost books. But the one we talked about today is Haunted Hollywood, Tinseltown Terror, Filmdom Phantoms, and more, and Movie Land Mayhem. And we did not even get to half the ghosts has in that book, not even probably three quarters. So it is.
And I'm learning more stories every day.
Yes. So I will definitely have you back on. You have been a pleasure. And I will point people to your Facebook page and other things like that. So thank you, everybody, for listening. And thank you, Tom, for being my spectacular, spooktacular guest.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Tom. Bye.
Falling down, or the dance that's a dream of romance, or the scene where the villain is mean. That's entertainment. The lights on the lady in tights, or the bride with the guy on the side, or the ball where she gives him her all. That's entertainment. Hot, simply teeming with sex. A gay divorcee who is after her ex. It can be Oedipus Rex, where a chap kills his father and costs a lot of bother. The clerk who is thrown out of work by the boss, who is thrown for a loss by the skirt, who is doing him dirt. The world is a stage. The stage is a world of entertainment. Scream, a swain getting slain for the love of a queen. Some great Shakespearean scene where a ghost and a prince meet and everyone ends in mincemeat. The gag may be waving the flag that began with the Mr. Cohan. Hip hooray, the American.